When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times, and by David Preece, goalkeeper, coach and columnist. Well, it's that time of year again. The Panto is playing to packed houses at Old Trafford. And beyond the theatre of screams, it's award season. We look at the good, the bad and the ugly. Begging Jose's pardon, let's take our managers of the year in two sections. First, the top five. Who's the man, Johnny?
Wow, well, I'm going to say someone that's not Pep Guardiola, even though that feels a bit odd. I think if we're looking at 2018, you've got to say Jurgen Klopp for me. If you remember, at the start of this year, Liverpool were still, you know, even they weren't struggling to be top four, but they were fourth. They were nowhere near where they are now. He started the year with that great win against City, halting their unbeaten run, took Liverpool to a Champions League final with some really memorable victories again against City on the way. And I think what you're looking for managers to do is progress and show signs of continuing to learn and progress. And over the summer, the recruitment at Liverpool suggested that, the little shift of tactics has suggested all of that. And for them now to be sitting at the top of the league with a better start in the top flight than in any of those seasons where they won the title, all those 18 title wins, and to be in a group of two with Manchester City, without spending City's money, I think it has to be Klopp. I think he's had a sensational year. And what Guardiola's done has been brilliant, but that it's met my expectations. Klopp's exceeded my expectations.
I suppose the man of the moment, though, is Pochettino. He's obviously not nailed on for the Manchester United job, but he's certainly very well regarded there. And you've got someone there who's actually managing, in the modern idiom, probably without as much money as others, and actually developing talent on the training pitch and giving that talent a chance when it matters.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there'll always be the accusations that he hasn't won anything yet. Still a possibility this season, obviously. But I think that him going to Manchester United, I don't know whether they'd be making the same mistake again, where they haven't got a manager who's won something. You know, when they go back to... They'll keep harking back until something... sort of meets the expectations of Manchester United. They'll keep harking back to Sir Alex Ferguson. And they brought in Sir Alex Ferguson from... There might have been a provincial club in Scotland, but...
European giants.
He came with a great track record of beating the best in Bayern Munich and Real Madrid and with silverware from... stealing that from Glasgow. So it's... for me, he is the right fit and he's the right sort of manager that they want. But... Manager of the Year, I don't think so quite yet. I think I will say Pep Guardiola, simply because he's kind of the last missing piece that they needed at the club for to make them the perennial sort of winners and to get them where they want to be in Europe. And I think it's exactly the same as Klopp. He does develop. He does take his philosophy and take it on another step. I think Edison coming into in the club last season was a really good example of that. That he wasn't frightened of of a player hitting the ball 60, 70 yards and making a pass where everything was directed short beforehand. So I think that he's doing Klopp is doing what other managers haven't been doing and paid for with the jobs.
I suppose City are very strategic in the way they work, aren't they?
Yeah.
With Guardiola, do you think if he wins the Champions League in 2019, which is favoured to do, that's almost like the end of the job, and he might then move on, will there be developments? Is he a long-term fit?
He hasn't been so far in his career, but when I was talking to someone about this, who's a Liverpool fan, desperate for me to say, oh, he'll be gone at the end of the season. I'm not sure if he will, because in his previous jobs, it's been about burning himself out. It's been about, you know, we know he's a very emotional kind of manager, a sort of high emotional pitch, as it were, type of guy. And you could see, you know, Barcelona was pure meaning and emotion in the battle against Real Madrid, and he was so in the thick of it. It did burn him out. And at Bayern Munich, very different conditions to what he has in England. He was never fully accepted by the hierarchy there, or rather the sort of, I guess, the Bayern grandees, the commentators outside the club, the media, the fans even. So he was always sort of slightly battling against criticism, even though he was doing so well. I think at City he's got a carte blanche. He's being acclaimed. He looks very comfortable. He's working with his pals in the hierarchy. He gets to sign who he wants. He's arguably created, for the first time, his own team. You know, I know he developed players at Barca, he developed the team at Bayern, but this really is a team that he's shaped. It's a very young team. It could go on and on. And I suspect he's, and none of us really get close to Pep, but I suspect he's a guy who has slightly different values to other managers, and it's about his fulfilment, his personal fulfilment. And he just looks so fulfilled at the moment at City. So if he's enjoying it, I'd expect him to stay. And that could be for the next 5-10 years.
Mm. And all, you know, the great managers have an eye for the successor in some ways, don't they? Are you looking at Arteta as a potential successor at City?
I would have thought so. I mean, what's most important about Manchester City, really, that's other clubs with the same sort of the same financial backing and the wealth they have. They have a real structure behind the scenes. You know, you talk about the players that come into the club. There's a reason why there's a real sort of lack of failure. There's very few players that don't succeed and don't improve in Manchester City these days. Mm. And okay, you know, people say Gabriel Jesus hasn't really sort of hit the heights he was expected to, but I wouldn't say he'd been a flop. So it was. So regardless of what happens with Pep, yeah, I think him coming to the club has ensured that they will have future success beyond his time at the club.
Yeah. Mm.
The other two, Sarri and Emery, obviously, you know, we've had 4 or 5 months to judge them. They seem to have made good initial impressions, haven't they?
They have. I think you're talking about quick progress, quick culture changes, quick changes of playing style, which is, you know, incredibly difficult to affect at the level that they're doing it. And hats off to them completely. What we haven't seen yet is where it's going to go, how it's going to be sustained. Chelsea have shown in moments that Sarri ball, as they call it, is sensationally good when it works. It can beat anybody. You know, the Manchester City game was a great example of that. That's a sign of their potential. But you know, this is a guy who hasn't won anything in his career. So can he take that next step? And Chelsea's always been about winning and less about style and so on. But in some ways, I think what Emery's done at Arsenal has been more impressive, just because they were at such a low base and I didn't expect them to be so competitive so soon. And they've still got such a poor defence, in my opinion. And they've got players, I think, like Ozil and maybe even Ramsey that aren't his cup of tea. And he's sort of working not with a ready-made squad or a ready-made sort of blueprint, but he's actually almost working against type and succeeding, bringing young players in, and I think there's really good signs for the future there. But you know, where is it going to go? That's he's now got to take the next step. Brilliant starts by both of them so far, I'd say.
That is a very small and exclusive club, the top five. Let's look outside that to some of the other maybe more unsung managerial jobs being done. You can look at Neil Warnock bringing that Cardiff team up and creating the siege mentality, the home games are in a fortress and all that sort of, you know, cliched nonsense we come out with. I was being really struck by Javi Gracia at Watford. There's a club which, with a revolving door, he's just been given a new longer-term contract.
Yeah, and I wasn't sort of surprised when he first came in, but I think early in his Watford's managerial career, he came up against Liverpool, and I think it might be his first or second game, and he went with three at the back and they absolutely destroyed him. And I thought it was so naive of him to do that. And it kind of led me to think, well, you know, it wasn't going to last long for him. But like everything else at Watford, it continues to surprise me. And you can see that the words that are coming out from likes of Troy Deeney and, you know, people knowing that, telling people that it's not this basket case of a club. It's not sort of something that managers should fear coming into and fear for their job. He's obviously settled in there now, and the fact that he said he'd give him a new contract, it says a lot, because it's a club that does have a high turnover of managers.
It's a fashion business, management. I think we're all aware of that. I suppose Sean Dyche is a case in point. Did unbelievably well to get Burnley at seventh.
Yeah.
He now has to put up with people saying, oh, well, let's get Sam Allardyce in and get rid of this bloke.
Because if we're thinking about 2018 as a whole year and not just the last 3 months in the Premier League, then you've got to remind yourself how unlikely and extraordinary Burnley being seventh actually is and was. If he's struggling this year, perhaps it's not only a kind of hangover from that in terms of physical tiredness, mental tiredness, but perhaps he's been guilty or the club's been guilty, because I don't think he's been backed in the transfer market, of maybe just trying to stick with players that succeeded last year. And in hindsight, that's a mistake. They maybe just needed to refresh the approach a bit, refresh the squad a bit more. But Sean Dyche has never been here before in his career. He's still a young manager learning. I remember Moyes at Everton, he struggled for a while he'd have a great season of achievement, and then fall back, and then another season, and then fall back. And it took him a while to perfect the trick of succeeding and doing well year after year, keeping people motivated and changing things just all the time a little bit with recruitment. So they haven't done that. That's the next thing Sean's got to do. But goodness me, I mean, three months, 18 games does not make him a failure. You know, he is still the guy that took Burnley to well, pretty much where Man United are now.
Yeah, one of his, you know, key choices in the new year will be as a goalkeeper. You know, Nick Pope's coming back. You played for the under-23s this week. You've got Tom Heaton's been around, and Joe Hart is in command of the shirt at the moment. You know, you're Sean Dyche. Who do you pick?
I think he's had a difficult decision to make, certainly with Joe Hart, because it's not like Joe Hart has been playing badly. You know, he's... But at the same time, I think, even in the past couple of seasons, the keepers have still been exposed. They've still been exposed to a lot of shots on target. They've had to work hard. They've probably had the most shots in the division. So it's about what the goalkeeper brings to the rest of the side as well, and whether the trust that they have in Nick Pope and Tom Heaton when they come into the side, knowing what they've done before and the relationship they've had with them before, I think that might give them a little bit more of a boost. And I think certainly with Nick Pope, he certainly deserves another chance at being number one. But he's changed a lot of the side, and that's probably the only thing that's left to change. And sometimes as a manager, when all other options are exhausted, that's the only thing left to do.
Do you think it'd be bad for dressing room dynamics if Pope didn't come back? I'm just thinking, there's a guy that did everything right for them, young player. You know, it'd be no fault of his if he didn't come back in. But
as long as he's coming back and he looks in the same shape as he was before in training, I think then there's no problem with that. I think Tom Heaton's got a big decision himself to make. I think that
one of the three will go in January.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the long-term option obviously will be with Nick Pope, and the financial outlay they've got on Joe Hart, that's going to keep them both at the club. So I think it'll see Tom going somewhere else.
So just to wrap this up, one name for outside the top five?
Well, I think Eddie Howe's done a great job. I'm really impressed how he's developed Bournemouth. But thinking about this, you know, we almost don't think of them as a small team at the moment, but Wolves, you've got to say that Nuno, I know he's had lots of money to spend, I know he's been given a really good hand to play, but he looks like a top manager. He sounds like a top manager. He's got the assurance. He sets his team up like a team that's experienced at competing in the top half of the Premier League. And you've got to remind yourself that they're a promoted side. And it doesn't matter how much money you've got, you've still got to implement those things within a group of players. So I think he probably edges Eddie Howe for me.
Dave? I'll go Neil Warnock. Simply because even he wouldn't have been expecting to go up last season. And not only that, I don't think anybody expected them to get in the double figures, certainly not by this stage anyway. And if they were going to do it, they're going to do it by grinding out draws. But was it 4 wins out of 5 at home?
Yeah.
Yeah, doing well at the moment.
Okay, we've got the JT Memorial Award, Captain, Leader, Legend. A couple of names come to mind, the most obvious being Virgil van Dijk at Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of a signing in recent years that's had such a transformative effect on a team. And I know centre-half is maybe the easiest position to influence a team from in some ways, but he came into a basket case defence, and now it's historically the best defence Liverpool have had for, you know, 30, 40 years. And he's got such calm and assurance. And when you break his game down, it's not like... It's not sensational. It's just, it's very, very good. But I think what makes him so special is what he exudes. It's the influence. You see him taking the ball in the box when he goes up to join the attack, and he's got this velvety touch and takes it down like he's an experienced striker. I mean, someone told me once that I think it was Eric Black actually, said you could play him at number 10 because he's got that. Yeah, he said he's got that in training. You could see he had that quality. And I think it's the example that sets, your big centre-half, has that assurance, has that class. It's just spread throughout the whole team. So that is proper leadership, I guess, by example.
Mm. And the other example would be at the other end of the pitch, someone like Harry Kane, and the consistency is remarkable.
It is, but those are the two captains that you have, and ordinarily now you probably have that captain that leads by example. You don't have the sort of the shouting the ball, or the people dragging people through games. Yeah, you just do it by consistently playing to a high level. And I mean, I can't ever think of Harry Kane having a bad game per se, because he still gives you something in a game. He still, you know, he still has a great work ethic. You know, you rarely see him sort of or don't notice him in games when a lot of very high profile players, and especially goal scorers, you know, they can go hiding sometimes. So it's And not only that, he leads by example off the pitch as well. Mm. Very rarely do you see him outside the back pages or ever.
Even the Carabao Cup quarterfinal with Arsenal, you know, he's playing at the Emirates. It's a fixture that means so much to him personally, because he was on Arsenal's books, obviously. Proud North London derby performer, all that sort of stuff. And he's on the bench, and there's not the whiff of discontent. In fact, he comes on and sets up Dele Alli to score without any fuss. Sacrifices himself, does it for the team, and that's what he represents, isn't it?
Mm. What about, you know, you talked about, Dave, leadership off the pitch. That comes in several forms, and I think Raheem Sterling has actually showed a different type of leadership, you know, in triggering a, you know, very important debate. And it's interesting also that the respect that seems to have engendered from within his own dressing room, and, you know, from his coach, you know, Guardiola has come out and you know, really publicly praised him for what he's done. Is that a different type of leadership?
Yeah, but I mean, it could have been so easy for him just to kind of just keep his head down and just maybe think to himself, oh, I'm going to have to work hard and get through it that way. But that's not going to solve any problems. And for him to come out and publicly do what he did, that it's, you know, takes great courage. And people are rightly showing a lot of admiration for him, because, like I said, it could be a watershed moment, really.
Mm. Okay, let's go on to an unsung player of the year. I'll kick it off if I may. Aaron Moy at Huddersfield, a bit like Harry Kane. I've never seen him have a bad game in a team which can't score to save its life, but he is this continual bundle of energy. And again, there's another form of leadership going on there. Mm. I think he's been brilliant. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I like that shout, because he's also someone that he's. If you talk about the journey, he's done the journey with them, hasn't he? And he's been that at every level for them. I wouldn't quibble. I mean, I've got a bit of a funny one for this. I would say Christian Eriksen, because obviously he gets acclaimed in that he gets sung. He's a good player. People say that, but I think this is one of the best players we've seen in the Premier League era. It's a guy that's never, I think he's once been in the Premier League team of the year, once in his 6 or 7 seasons. He's, you know, he's the little bit of genius in that Spurs team. He consistently produces the moment to win them a big game. And he's taken, I think he's taken for granted. I don't think he's quoted among the De Bruyne's and the Hazards, but I think he is of that influence for his team and maybe of that quality, if maybe slightly short, I don't know. But Spurs wouldn't trade him for any of those players. And I don't know why he is not spoken about as highly as Dele Alli, as highly as Harry Kane. I don't know why he's not seen as, this is one of the very best, this is one of the superstars of the league, because he is for me in performances.
Mm. You could almost call it the Heung-min Son.
Yeah, well, that's the other one, isn't it? Yeah.
Because, I mean, what level do you get, or how many mentions have been sort of underrated, the most underrated player in the league, before you actually rated?
Yeah.
And I think he's done it so many times now that and rescued them. And when Harry Kane isn't playing, then he's put up front as a striker and still does a great job no matter where he's playing. So it's, he'd be one for me. I think Fabian Delph at City.
Good show.
The fact that he came at left back last year and played a, obviously a very good footballer and somebody that we'd forgotten about how good he was because of all the injuries that he'd had in the past. But also watching him on there, All or Nothing, just the role that he takes in the dressing room, and that, of course, Vincent Kompany kind of takes, it feels like he plays the role of the captain, and he's sort of statesman-like, where Fabian Delph is sort of like, he's the gritty part of it, and the one where the emotion comes out, and he really, he really feels that, if anybody's not doing enough, he really tells them, so it was really nice to see the role that he plays in the dressing room, despite all the big names in there.
Yeah, James Milner, quite similar.
Oh yeah, I mean, God, that as David sort of touched on, he's one of those that's been in the underrated category for 15 years. We've been saying he's underrated, so maybe and Liverpool fans rate him very, very highly. But what that guy's doing at this stage of his career is sensational, and it's a testament to what he's put in early in his career, the discipline, the learning, and the lives like a monk, and it's good to see him succeed.
35 years old and he's putting all the kids to shame in pre-season.
It's ridiculous.
And he'll play anywhere, won't he?
Exactly.
Yeah. But like young players, someone like Milner is a perfect example. I know Steven Gerrard, when he was at Liverpool, used to cite him when he was talking to his under-18 kids about, this is what a pro looks like. Of the young players coming through, obviously we have fantastic success at England level, at youth level. I suppose the breakout star is Jadon Sancho, isn't he?
Oh yeah. I mean, he's the one. We know Foden has got it in him as well, but he hasn't quite had the opportunities yet. But Sancho's the one that's, if you're looking over this year, has just gone from kid to international class performer, because he is. If you look at what he's doing in terms of the European goals and assists table, what he's done at international level already, and this is a teenager living abroad and taking a very bold path, and Christian Pulisic has now been relegated, who was the great thing of European football for a while, and because of Sancho's performances, so come an enormous way in a short space of time. And one of the things I'm most excited about in 2019 is covering England and seeing what he can do for them.
Mm. That group is fantastic, wasn't it? That under 17 group.
Yeah, brilliant. And just looking at the under 17s and 20s, I'm just surprised how many have got abroad.
Yeah,
to Lyon, Mönchengladbach, and
Monaco.
Yeah, exactly. It's great for English football, I think. With Jadon Sancho, at his age, Ronaldo was a show pony, or he was accused of being a show pony, with no end product. Now you've got this kid doing exactly the same thing on the ball with an end product, with assists, with goals as well. So, he's not peaking too early, but if that's any comparison to go by, he's got some future ahead of him, hasn't he? Mm.
If we're talking about young players, by the way, Aro Muric, I know talking about Man City talent, but he may not get the opportunities to shine over the next year, but that guy, I saw him at Leicester the other night in the Carabao Cup, and I was absolutely blown away. I mean, at the age of 20, is it? Mm. The physique, he was playing half the game in the centre circle, almost as a sweeper, booting the ball miles, claiming everything, brilliant in the penalty shootout, and you're just like, Man City have done it again. Mm.
You see much of him?
Yeah, a lot of him. He's unfortunate, really, because although the experience in the League Cup, it'll stand him in good stead, and especially for Manchester City, you know, he should have been at NAC Breda in Holland on loan this season and getting 30, 40 games under his belt. But certainly he's got everything, and he's got a real good arrogance about him, real good self-confidence. Like I said, he's 6 foot five, good with the ball at his feet.
Yeah. He's a good trainer.
Very good. You know, he's got a great attitude, and it's not like I said about his arrogance. There's no sense of entitlement there that, you know, he deserves his chance. He wants to work hard, and like I said, it's a shame that he won't get those 30, 40 games under his belt in the Eredivisie. But this kind of experience.
So he's obviously got the respect of the dressing room, because I noticed as they went to the supporters at the end in that Leicester game. All the rest of the team stood back and started chanting his name, you know, as the fans were doing. So, yeah, there is obviously something there, and talent always recognises talent, doesn't it?
Well, exactly. But, I mean, other than, Angus Gunn being transferred to Southampton and Claudio Bravo getting...
10 million injured. Quid, can't get in the team.
Yeah, he's not there, and he's... Okay, he's getting that experience, but he's out of sight, out of mind for a lot of fans, so it's great for him that he's been brought to everyone's attention.
Anyone else coming through? Leicester, a club you know, Chilwell?
Chilwell's exceeded what I thought he was capable of, to be honest. I thought he looked, could go either way in his first sort of season there, but he's been excellent, and he stepped up for England. And Maddison's got to be one of the finds, because this is his first season at the top flight, and he's still very young, but he changed the game the other night when he came on, as he does. He's that player that just elevates the whole Leicester team, just makes him a different proposition. I mean, he took a terrible penalty and, you know, tried to stutter.
He wasn't alone in
good company.
It was the worst penalty shootout I've seen in a long time. But he's got the ability to slow the game down a little bit, make it at his pace, inventive with everything he does. Whether there's a place for him for England or, I don't know, top teams, just because of the way football's going, with the emphasis on flexibility and pressing in the front line, which I think he can do, but it's probably not his best suit. I don't know. It's almost like watching a young Matt Letizia or something, and I think in a different era, Maddison would be an absolute superstar, but he'll have a very good career.
Let's look at goalkeeper of the year, shall we? The big three, De Gea and the two Brazilians, you know, with Jordan Pickford maybe, you know, a hot fourth. That about right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's all talk about sort of classes, forms temporary, classes permanent, but it's, if you look at David De Gea, he's still a class keeper, he's still world class. In the style of goalkeeping that he employs, he's still probably the best up there with Jan Oblak. But for the effect that he's having on his side, he's not having that effect anymore in the past 12 months, and not for his country either. And I think Alisson, it's been exactly what they've needed. Okay, there's a couple of mistakes been thrown in there, but they've had no effect on the results or on his confidence either. But I'd have to go with Ederson, really, simply because he hasn't had the effect that other keepers have had by with his hands, but with his feet. He has a massive influence on the way that they play, and the change in sort of being susceptible to the press like they were when Bravo first came into the side sort of 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. So I think that it's probably Ederson. And not only because of that, I think that what him and Alisson show, rather than anything with talent, anything with skill, is their composure and their mentality, and that spreads to the other side.
You agree with that?
Yeah, it's a hard one, because we see De Gea's excellence, but, you know, goalkeeping's evolving, and it's not just the ability to play with the feet, but they've mentioned it a couple of times, the being part of the whole team, being part of the 11, being influencing the whole 11. And that's what we're seeing Ederson and Alisson do. And it's sad, but you watch Peter Cech these days, and it's like watching someone playing in black and white. It's just you know, what a great keeper he was in his era, but that watching him reminds you how goalkeeping's moved on. And I think De Gea might still be the most talented shot stopper, but I think that Alisson and Ederson are probably doing more for the whole team.
honourable mention for Fabianski, maybe? You know, not a lot was expected of him, but he seems to have been, you know, excellent. Consistently excellent.
Yeah, he has, and certainly for the last few seasons with Swansea as well. But he's made the step up now to West Ham, and I'm glad to see that the side doing well, because I'd hate for him to go through the rest of his Premier League career being a sort of a firefighter and just keeping scores down, which he was doing in sort of like the game at Anfield. He's making his saves are meaning something. He's making a contribution towards winning points. But also Martin Dubravka as well.
Yeah.
You know, he's been a big surprise. And every time we talk about underrated players, especially goalkeepers, I always think of those two straight away. Mm. And the leap that Martin Dubravka's made from sort of a couple of years ago, when he was playing in Denmark for Esbjerg, it's just huge. Don't think anybody, ask anybody in Denmark, the sun there, they wouldn't have saw this coming. But he hasn't shown any real signs that he's going to go back to that kind of keeper either. So it's a great sign by Rafa Benitez. Mm.
Talking of great signings, who's your signing of the season, Johnny?
It's a tough one. I mean, I think Shaqiri's having an influence on the title race that, for £12 million is pretty good. I think, but he's not a main player. You've got to recognise that. He's not come in and become a central player. Maybe Torreira, which given the position he's in is one of the hardest ones to sign for, and players are costing so much money in central midfield. And I think he was, what, £29 million, something like that. It wasn't like he was a mystery. I mean, he was performing for Uruguay and in Serie A, but just looks like a brilliant spot. And what he's got that I didn't know he had was the footballing ability. You knew he was going to be a terrier and in that sort of Uruguayan mode, but he's a real footballer as well.
Mm.
Don't know about sign of the season, but the decision for Spurs not to sign anybody, if they should go on to win the League Cup, qualify for the Champions League again, and maybe progress even further than they have done in the past in the Champions League, that's a successful season for Spurs. And regardless, I mean, they may bring somebody in January, I don't know, but it was a bold decision, really, because I think, you know, they could have quite easily brought in somebody who would bolster the squad and come off the bench. But I tend to agree with their policy, because I thought anybody that was coming in needed to be £50-60 million to improve this side. But who are you going to get that sort of player to come in and maybe play a second fiddle as people like Harry Kane? So it's...
Yeah. Let's be charitable and say that West Ham have had a patchy record in recruitment. I've been really impressed with Issa Diop.
Yeah,
I think this kid's going to be an absolute monster.
Yeah. That I mean, yes, and absolutely, probably a better signing even than Felipe Anderson, who's working out well for them. But again, you know, similar to central midfielders, that's a position where even unproven players are costing 50-60 million. A snip has adjusted the Premier League like he's been playing for ages, and is making sense of West Ham sort of at the back, which seemed like a difficult job.
I suppose we must be cruel. Flop of the season. Do we need to look outside Old Trafford? Because you've got you know, you've got Sanchez, you've got Pogba, you've got Fred.
I mean, I have to go for Sanchez. Simply because it hasn't happened at all. I watched him last season, the defeat at St James's Park, and he was one of the few bright sparks who were, at least he wasn't playing well, but at least you could see his effort was there, and he was one capable of creating something. But I don't know, it just makes you think there's something more to it than meets the eye. Whether he's unhappy off the pitch, maybe his dogs have been unwell or something like that. you just don't know. I mean, these things happen, but I think it certainly doesn't look good value for money. It's £500,000 a week.
What about Pogba? He is a problem, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he doesn't come out of the whole, Mourinho departure looking very good, does he?
No, he doesn't. I think last time we spoke about this, I was, and I think there's even more now that he's shown his limitations in the last year. He's shown...
As a player and as a person?
As a person, probably more than anything, because it's hard to talk about limitations as a player when he's got that bundle of attributes. But as a person, as a character, I think with him, it's hard. I'm trying to analyse him. I don't think it's a lack of effort, per se. It might be a lack of maturity, but he doesn't have that thing that enables a player to just perform at a great level all the time, no matter what the circumstances are. And if you want to be one of the world's great players, that's what you've got to do. And that's what he's styled as. And it looks to me like he's a fair weather player. And yes, you know, Jose was a big bad wolf and they didn't get on, but his reaction to all of that has been really disappointing. And it's arguably, if you want to be harsh on Paul Pogba, he won the World Cup, but he wasn't the best player or main player for France. I know some of his supporters have tried to say that. He was just a cog in the machine. And he wasn't that at Juventus either. He wasn't the best player.
Yeah, he didn't. His performance is one what you perceive as a great Paul Pogba performance. Mm. Like you said, he did a job.
Yeah.
And in many ways, probably he's played within himself. But like you said, as part of the team, it worked. It seems ridiculous criticising somebody who's so talented, who's a World Cup winner. And but you see his reaction to losing the ball sometimes. It does show an immaturity when you hear about stories that, like yesterday morning, that he was, or the morning that he was, Mourinho was sacked, that he's seen high-fiving players and having sort of been pulled aside by Michael Carrick. It's a real sign of maturity, regardless of whether you're happy that the manager's gone or not. And especially inside a dressing room, there will be players who were unhappy that Mourinho had gone because, Eric Bailly, you know, he's obviously grateful to Mourinho for bringing the club and giving them the career at Manchester United.
You've been around dressing rooms. What will be the immediate challenge facing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
In that first 15 minutes he has with the whole squad, he's got to convince them that he knows what's right for them. And because it's so difficult for a caretaker manager to come in and have any kind of authority. Because I get that this appointment is just something that's for their heads rather than their bodies or anything tactical. It's to lighten the mood and to create more of an environment where individuals will play better. But as a cohesive unit, they've got nothing to gel them together. There's no sort of future. And I know that if things do start going wrong, there's nothing for Solskjaer you can't crack the whip.
Yeah.
You know, and then the fact that he's already been there as a coach before and Pogba's had him as a coach, that's how Pogba will see him. We'll see him as a reserve team coach. And I'm sure that Pogba thinks already puts himself, ranks himself above him. If he did that, because if he did that before, with Mourinho or someone on the same level as the manager who's won so much as Mourinho, then I don't think Solskjaer's got any chance of, you know, of pulling them together should things go wrong.
Mm. So he has to say what's in it for them. You can't wield authority. He's got to say to them, "I'll make you better," or "I'll make you enjoy yourself," or what?
Simply because, you know, like, there's been a lot of times when managers have had the sack at clubs I've been at, and the dressing room's been split. Mm-hmm. Players who have been unhappy, the ones who haven't been playing well, the ones who haven't been playing at all, they'll be the happy ones. Mm. They'll be overjoyed, and then they'll probably be the ones the new manager can sort of maybe trust more, or they'll have them on side for straight away. And the other ones will still be a little bit of a hangover for them, although they'll want to do well for the manager and for themselves. But I just think that dressing room, you know, people keep saying that teams should be getting more out of team. Yes, individually, but as a team, you can't see them gelling together at all.
Mm. How do you see the whole thing panning out in terms of like 6 months' time? Will we have Pochettino in charge, do you think? And if so, will we see, you know, there's a lot of talk about if that happens, Eddie Howe would end up at the new White Hart Lane. How do you see it all panning out?
Well, for Man United, this is it. You know, this is, for Ed Woodward's Man United, this is it. This is the time where I think it stands or falls, if it hasn't fallen too far already. So what Solskjaer does is provides, I don't know, sticking plaster, stability, whatever you want to call it. But it just pauses time just slightly for them. But the work has to be now. I think there's great logic in Pochettino as an appointment. I mean, we talked about earlier, nobody's got Alex Ferguson's package. So you've got to try and cherry pick the bits that you think are most appropriate at this time. But it's going to be enormously, enormously difficult to get him, and that process has to work for Woodward. And if it doesn't work, it's, I don't know, I wouldn't be optimistic given the past record of his past record of transfers and appointments that he'll come up with a decent plan B. I have to say that, it might sound harsh, but there's been a lot of knee-jerk, sort of shallow bits of recruitment, I think, at United over the last 4 or 5 years. So if he doesn't get Poch, it's really difficult. And Solskjaer just has to lighten the mood, but things can't fall further. And that's the job you're talking about, Dave, isn't it? Things can't fall any further for United. That's the main priority. It's got to be a happier place. It's got to play good football and not implode any further.
Yeah, I suppose it's not all doom and gloom at United. You know, the academy was in disarray when Sir Alex left. It's building up again. Now, if we're looking at, you know, potential breakout stars from, you know, nowhere in 2019, I'd put forward Mason Greenwood, you know, hat-trick this week. I've been watching him since he was about 15, over the last couple of years. There's someone, given his head and given the traditions of the football club, could make an impact from nowhere.
I mean, we talked about before, that might be the role that Solskjaer plays now. He's the one that's perhaps might take a chance and just put him straight in the team. And then will that be detrimental to his development by throwing him in a little bit sooner than he's ready for the sake of some goodwill and some good PR and doing the same, like I said, what Van Gaal did with Rashford?
Yeah. Do you see anyone else around we could make that, you know, sort of left field entrance?
Maybe not quite as under the radar as Mason Greenwood. I mean, the signs with Gibbs White, very, very sort of impressive for England and in his little performances so
great
far.
Great touch on the ball, isn't it?
Great touch, you know, really good athlete, looks just a consummate modern player. I think there could be a role for Mason Mount at Chelsea after his hiatus at Derby, if we're talking about over the next year. So, you know, he should be, with his talent, should be looking to be in the team from next season onwards. But I think the buzz about Greenwood, and United have hidden him from England. They pulled him out of squads and he didn't go to the Championship last year. The buzz about him is probably the strongest of the players who we haven't quite seen in the league yet.
Just going back to the point about Manchester United and bringing young players through like Mason Greenwood as well, I'm surprised, I don't think he would go, but I'm surprised that even Bielsa hasn't been mentioned.
Interesting.
Because if you can't get Guardiola and you can't get Pochettino, who do you get? Well, who's close to that? You get the man.
Too much of a loose cannon, maybe?
Yeah, for, I mean, he hasn't really sort of being given a club like Manchester United to hold the reins of. But, I mean, look at him now. I mean, he's the top of the Championship now. He's so reluctant to bring any players in. He's given players the head from who was 17, 18 years old. There was 8 players under 23 in that squad at the weekend. I mean, I think Leeds is perfect for him because Leeds is still an old-fashioned club. It feels like a real club. It's not a business entity.
It's also a what-if club. What if someone got hold of this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he seems to be that the person who's doing it at the moment. But I just think stranger doesn't even be mentioned, though.
Yeah. Well, let's tie all this together then. New Year wish. If you had one wish for yourself or for football in general in the new year, what would it be?
Well, you mentioned Raheem Sterling earlier on. The way that, you know, racist incidents and fan disorder, with the bottle being thrown at Dele Alli this week as well, has reared its ugly head again. I hope that was a very sort of temporary throwback. And with Sterling and racism, he's tried to open the discussion to widen it into how we are as an industry, media industry, how we are as a game in terms of institutional racism. I hope that conversation takes place intelligently, because there's already been, for me, attempts to suppress it. And I hope, you know, let's try and think about this seriously and intelligently. If a 23-year-old footballer has to show us how to think, then so be it. But he deserves, the game deserves, that is a fundamental, proper discussion.
No, I totally agree with that. I think I would ban the words "but" and "what about" from those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then make sure that we're not going to, this isn't going to be raid in sort of a month's time or 6 months' time, a year's time. So we need to make sure that every week, every month, they're still having the conversation about it.
Well, this is going to make three of us. My wish is for Raheem Sterling to be voted Footballer of the Year sometime in May. That'd shut him up, hopefully. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast, and have a great Christmas.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.